Welcome to Star Fingers On Call. I am Paul Franz, owner of Franz Games. I run SLB Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Justin Wenner joins me to talk cast every Thursday starting 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either call on the phone, just dial 605-562-0444. Just follow the directions. Call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web. Just go to the TalkShoe website at www.talkshoe.com and search for Call ID 17702 or SFU on call or Starfleet Universe on call, and you should find us there. But if you want the best online experience, what you want to do is you want to go to twitch.tv. Yes, that's twitch.tv/SFU on call, and you'll find us there. You'll join the chat room and join the lovely discussion that happens during said live stream. And if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. That's sfuoncall at gmail.com. Also, if you want to follow me on the Twitters / X or whatever I want to call it this week, my podcasting account is sfuoncall. That's sfuoncall. Also, you want to follow my personal account, that would be Paul Franz, PaulFranz. There's no T in that. Also, if you want to follow my business account, that's Franz Games. So it's FranzGames, and of course, there's no T in that. And of course, the lovely Talkcast, Get Turned Up Podcast, available on iTunes and various other feeds around the net. Some quick news from AB this week. Steve Petrick, again, is working on Module K and also the Ryan Messer Starship book. Also, something that's kind of, it's AB adjacent, just because ADB has been using Shapeways for a while to actually create miniatures for people. And unfortunately, as of July 2nd, Shapeways has ceased operation and filed a voluntary petition for relief under the provisions of Chapter 7, Title 11. And this is according to the 3D printing industry website. Not exactly sure what ADB is going to do about that, but we'll just have to wait and see. But I figured it would be a good thing to announce to people that that is happening. Also, found on the online store for this week, we found the Away Team Log. It's $24.95. Away Team Log is a compilation of the RPG material published in 19 issues of Captain's Logs, along with some of the fictions and other material that will be of interest to RPG players. Finally, role players can get this material without having to buy over $400 worth of books. But you're not a role player. Not a problem. You'll find this book quite an enjoyable read. This book is entirely fiction and background. System-specific stats are also in a separate supplement. Away Team Missions, a call to battle, for battle all things, duty, honor, empire, and for the good of the empire. Actually, I know the for the good of the empire. I've actually read that, not that one. Some geography and history, planetary surveys, Organa, Mad Jack's Hole, background files on the Gorns, Scullions, Lyran Democratic Republic, the Borak, and the Zinnies. People and organizations, the Klingon detectives, sagas of the Klingon warriors, Inspector Combs, the mercenaries of Black Nebula, and the pirates of Orion, and zombies. Always gotta love zombies. Billions, a preview of the future source book, deck plans, history, biology, military ranks, and their desperate journey to find and conquer a new galaxy. That actually should be interesting. Wonder if they'll ever do that. And the final directives, the Phaser Uzi, Hot Pursuit in Starships, and Prime Directive conversions you won't ever see. Moving on and forward to the SFB Online tournament, Sapphire Star 17 tournament signups are still open, though we do have 16, but we are still waiting for confirmation from Mr. Petrick about exactly if make sure that everybody is all paid up, because there's a $10 entry fee. Now, obviously, for some people like myself, who've been playing in these tournaments for a while, we get our entries fee back because we won like our first round. I've never gone home to the second round, so I haven't got anything additional. So I just let them hold my money, and then so I can use that either for purchasing product, or I can actually use it to for the next tournament. And I've been just using it for the next tournament. So I know some people have just been let it ride, you know, that kind of thing. Moving on forward to the library report, when it comes to the SFB library, nothing new there. Also the Confed Combo library, again, nothing new there. And with that, that is news for this week. Welcome to Staffing Nurse On Call. I am Paul Franz, owner of Franz Games. Also, welcome. Sorry, I went right into the news portion and what I do at the beginning there. So forgive me. For those who are actually listening to this after I record it, you're going to go, oh, what is Paul doing? Because it's me! Welcome to Starfleet Nurse On Call. And tonight we have Jeff, as soon as I can click on him. Hey, Jeff.
Good evening, everyone.
And of course, we have Doug. Say hi, Doug.
Hi, Doug.
And I hope that y'all can hear our lovely co-hosts a lot better this evening than in the past, because I think I finally figured out what the issue with the piping and so forth between the different programs and apps and so forth. I still want to change the recording a bit, but that's not neither here nor there. I'll be fine at the moment. I think at least it's better for y'all. So, anyhow, moving on and forward. Actually, I want to continue actually a discussion that we were doing last week, which was basically alternate tactics for some of the from the tournament ships, or even talk about some of the alternate tournament ships. I think that actually, why don't we start there first? Because that's one thing that, you know, we rarely talk about, which is, okay, I'm bringing it up here. I'll go with this one, which is, don't mind me, and that would be that. And that is, this is one of those ships that is not...
Paul?
Yes?
Looks like the video stream on Twitch is not up.
Are you sure?
It says you're offline, but I see a count on the timer going. So here, let me reload the page.
Yeah, because I can see it myself.
Yeah, there you are. There you are.
Okay.
Loosen up behind steering wheel.
That's fine. I can see it on the Twitch app. I'm not streaming. I'd like someone to explain that to me. But anyway, I want to go through some of the alternate tournament ships tonight. I want to like to start there, just because of it's something we rarely talk about. I understand that these are not approved, you know, they're not sanctioned, so they can't be part of a normal tournament. Though I like to at least examine them, just because I'm not sure if I ever have talked about them at all. I might have talked about them really long ago now. And obviously, one thing that's happening, just starting right now, actually, within the next week, we should see, which is the actual announcing of the tree for Sapphire Star 17 tournament. Because we have the final person registered. As I mentioned before, I don't know if they paid. So I have to, until we're on hold, until that that's been verified, that they've paid and we're all good to go. And at that point, then Steve Patrick will create the tournament tree. But anyway, one of the alternate ships, which was, I think it's kind of interesting, which is, of course, the Orion tournament cruiser, the heavy cruiser, instead of being the battle raider, it's actually a heavy cruiser. Now, as you know, as it says here, you know, the ship cannot have more than one phaser gene on each of the opposite factions. Orion's withdrawing rest can trade two type ones with type twos for type one. They can do that twice, which is
what anybody with drones can do, other right. than
right, right, right. The, okay, the, this can't upgrade
Klings them. And the Zennies,
right, and the Winds.
The Winds can do it three times.
No, two times.
Yeah,
it's only the Zennies that can do it three times. But as it's pointed out in here, which is. This one is a little different in that, obviously, compared to the Battle Raiders, much larger ship, number one. Number two, it's actually got six option mounts instead of the five option mounts. So you actually can have a full six drone racks, which most people think is insane. But, hey, that's one of those alternate... ideas that we had about flying the Battle Raider, which to me is interesting by itself, in that if you think about it, that means you got basically the one aux box, but you have a lot more power than the one aux box, but of course you're also dealing with the eggshell. So once you get through the unlike the wax where it actually could
be, you got the eggshell issue, and you also have the fact that the extreme amount of power is only temporary.
Yes. Yes. As you double your engines, you lose them. You know, a little bit at a time. And that is very, very true.
Good grief. You only have 34 power, looks like. Is there no reactor?
No reactor.
Damn.
Yeah.
I don't, you know, that would make, you know, 34 power with six drone racks. After you pay your four for housekeeping, you're, you know, either you're going to be at speed 30, you could fly around the map and do all kinds of stuff, or you could slow down a little bit and brick up here and there. Mm-hmm. Hex speed 21 for a four hex turn, though, is on the nice side for something that big.
Oh, yeah. And of course, the downside of doubling them all is, of course, that's seven only two boxes. There'd be three boxes that get destroyed because of its three engines. But of right. course, the benefit of this ship is that when it doubles, that's if you can double it to 68 points of power to begin with, anyway, which is a lot of power.
Well, if you're running the six drone variant, mm-hmm. With 68 points of power, all you're going to really be able to do is put up one massive brick, or one massive anchor, one or the other.
Yep. And the thing is, for this ship, if you look at it, in my mind, it's still kind of an eggshell, but not much as much of an eggshell as the Battle Raider is. Has a lot more internals than the Battle Raider, comparatively speaking. Now, when it comes to, and also if it comes to control, now you have four boxes instead of the three. So that helps in that regard. And also it has four transporters. I don't think the... Does the Battle Raider have, how many transporters does it have?
I want to say it has two, but you can.
Has three.
Scan up there and find it. Three?
Yep. Yeah. Only has two labs. That's a big issue. Somebody tells me the heavy cruiser also has only two labs. That wouldn't surprise me anyway. No. Somebody even that would surprise me. No labs.
It doesn't have it's got one effective lab.
Right, which is the bridge. You can control space as a lab. Wow.
Once.
Well, you can use that's like
more than once. Once a turn.
Yeah, once a turn.
No. I mean you can only use one control space as a lab per turn. You can't use all four control spaces as labs.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's better than zero.
This is true.
It's worse than the Andromeda. The Andromeda only has two labs.
Well, there's no point in putting just one lab on a ship. There really isn't.
Oh, agreed. Because you can use the control space. In my mind, it'd be better to, instead of having one lab, to have give me an additional control space.
That matter, you know, an extra box of hull or extra battery or, you know, some other fluff, give it something. It's just one lab. This is not worth it.
Yeah. Oh, understood. But definitely, I think
that would be an interesting one. That would be an interesting ship to play the cut rate Zenti, because basically all you'd really do is you'd fly like a phaser boat.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd try to get in a position late in the turn so that you could run up on somebody and over the course of a turn break, get to tractor range, win the tractor auction over EA, and launch to your heart's content and hope you survive the backlash.
Agreed. And the funny thing is that the phaser arrangement is a lot closer to the Zinni. It's actually pretty darn close.
Yeah, it is. It really is.
Yeah, I know.
It lacks the second pair of rear dominant phasers, but phaser threes,
mm-hmm.
And it has none of the super firing 360s. But aside from that, it's very close to the. To the Zenti in the phaser secondary.
Yep. We didn't have a sound. Okay. Hello.
I can hear you.
Okay. Don't mind me. According to Dave, Jeff has no sound, but no audio the video. Okay, let's make sure that. Don't mind me. Double checking here. Okay, well,
I just pulled my iPad audio up, and I'm not hearing anything from my iPad, which probably means the audio channel's kind of screwy at the moment.
Yeah, that's weird. I do mean the network. Oh, crap. I know why.
Why is that?
I screwed that up. I thought I added this. I know what I did. I forgot about that. Oh, crapola. I know what I did. Don't mind me.
Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain.
Yeah. There it goes.
Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain.
Okay.
Oh, you just echoed big time, Jeff. Your entire statement. Like, the entire sentence went off, and then, like, a second later, the entire sentence went off again.
Okay. Whoops.
Oh, that's fine. Yeah, well, oh, that was me. That was completely me. That's because I was playing through my iPad and it was going in through my microphone. Now, now the sound should be good.
Yeah, that's the Twitch delay getting to you.
Kind of. Joyce. Okay. That's gonna be interesting. Okay. I'm gonna have to do some fixing. Jeesh. That's gonna be awful. Because what I totally forgot with OBS, when I switch scenes, it uses different audio devices, a different list of audio devices. So I have to record my audio devices on both scenes. And I switch scenes from just having me being, and I had my setup, audio recording that set up one way there. But when I switched it to be my desktop with me as an upper right hand corner, then all the other audio devices I had muted, and the one audio device I had added for the scene with just me, the audio voice did not exist. So I've got some work to do tonight or tomorrow.
Too long didn't read is you got tripped up by the complexity in the system.
Yeah. I'm not sure. Honest, that one, I don't know why that OBS is set up so that when you change scenes, it changes your list of audio devices. But whatever. I'll work on that later tonight, and hopefully I can take the recording from the audio portion for the podcast. Audio portion for the podcast and add that to the video portion. That's going to be fun. Okay, whatever. Let's move on before I...
That's a problem for future Paul.
Yes, problem for future Paul, which means basically the YouTube... the YouTube video will be posted up late. It's going to be posted up tomorrow because that's going to require way too much work to get it done tonight. Especially because usually when I get it done, usually it's way later as is. I get to bed somewhere between 11:30 and midnight. So I'm not doing that. You go have to go past midnight. But anyway, moving on and forward. This one is one that people kind of want, but they really don't want. I don't think they really want as much.
It's sexy.
Of course it's sexy.
And then it's not.
Right. Exactly. That is the issue I find with the ship. For those of you on the podcast, it's the Hydrogen Tartar Tournament Cruiser, which is basically the war cruiser for the Hydrans. Having the three Hellbores has the two phaser ones, four phaser twos, no fusions, and of course, you know, the two phaser Gs, no fighters. Now, if you look at this and then you look at the number of amount of power, that's going to be 24 warp, right? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, yep. 24 warp. You've got 6 APR,
reactor,
30,
and 4 impulse,
34. That makes things interesting for you when using Hellbores.
Yeah, it pretty much means you're going to be using one Hellbore slot as a dead weapon for whatever reason, for rotational purposes, in order to keep enough power to the engines to move around the board, unless you happen to get some really, really interesting scenarios.
Agreed. Though, another alternate usage of the Hellbores is don't overload them. Just
correct.
Always fire them in.
But if you're gonna, you got three of them there. That's 9 points of power a turn, every turn. And since you only start with 34, That drops you down to, let's see, 30 after housekeeping.
Right.
And then another 9, you're down to 21. So you don't have, well, wait a minute. That's War Cruiser hull. You only need what, 20?
20.
Go 30?
20 to go 30.
Yeah.
So you can still go 31 if you want to, assuming that you're not recharging your phasers.
Right.
But that's true case for many ships, like the Celtorian. If they can run around pretty fast as long as it doesn't have to recharge the phasers.
Well, yeah.
It's got like, let me think. 10? Yeah, it's a 10 capacity phaser. But, you know, 10 point of phaser capacity. Because it has 8 phaser 1s and 4 phaser 2s. That's 10 points of power. That's a lot of power.
2s or 3s?
There's 4 3s. When I'm talking about the Celtorian.
Right. So yeah, if there's eight ones and 4 3s, yeah, that's a phaser cap of 10 points.
Yep. That's a lot of power. So you know, if I'm charging
one of the reasons why critical cannons, one of the reasons phasers, why I tend to take.
So that's why
one of the reasons I tend to take 2 phaser ones with the Black Shark when I fly it. It gives me 2 extra points in the capacitor, even if I don't end up using the phasers.
Can you stop that? Sorry. The local Zinni is sharpening his claws on my knee.
Oh, man.
Did the boys just get home?
Oh, yeah. Boys are both home.
Okay. I thought I heard them.
Hold on 1 second.
Okay. See, that's the bad part about having good sound. I actually can hear a lot more of the background noise.
Yeah. Yeah, we have the one door is open because of stuff. They just got mommy and the older boy just got back from scout camp tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. So, and there's something blocking the door, so it's open. Blah blah blah.
No comment.
And the younger one is very vocal. Daddy's on Paul's podcast. Can you shut that door, please, Alfie? Move that fan and shut that door, please. Thank you. So yeah, that ship is sexy until it's not.
Yep.
But you know what? Now, is that one you could actually run in a regular tournament? Or not?
No, it's not sanctioned.
It's never been sanctioned?
Nope.
Okay.
I'm going through the currently non-sanctioned ones. And obviously, some of these...
I thought they sanctioned that one. Huh.
No.
Why not?
I don't know. See, that's the one thing that I find quizzical. In some of these, definitely I can understand why this, not this one, the Orion heavy cruiser, that one I can understand them not wanting to sanction, because that one I think can break things. That's because of the amount of energy it can actually...
Well, the Orions can break things anyway.
Right. Understood.
Any of them.
Right.
But it's not an eggshell.
Right. Which I think is might be
part doesn't of have that huge handicap the other one does.
Right. And this one, yeah. This is one of those ones that it's like the when they let in the they have it here. Here it is. The Jindarian. The Jindarian currently is considered sanctioned. It's a very weak ship. And definitely, if anybody wants to play it, have fun. You can play it. Will you win in it? Maybe a game, 2, possibly. Will you win the tournament? No, I don't think so. But because of it has the Margs and the whole, of course, being Jindarian and the Margs, they have that awful firing arcs that they do. You know? And it's you can't, you need to be able to actually be able to target more firepower a single instance, you know. So
that's what makes some of the that's what makes the Andromedan hard to fly, and most of the disruptor races for that matter too, if you want to get down to it, is the lack of one turn crunch power.
True.
Yeah, that one you would have to basically run it around, just keep it running around the map, so you're always changing which weapons you're bringing to bear. And but if you can keep your opponent chasing you, you might be able to, with that RFR and that LFFL, with those arcs, you might be able to like stay on one shield and just nibble it down and just keep turning around that map. That's about the main viable strategy I could see with it, because it doesn't seem to have like one, at least one or two arcs, or even a line down a hex line that you can just bring everything to bear.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So,
Invariably,
too much of it split off.
Yep.
But on the other hand, if your opponent is trying to run you down and you aren't slowing down for him, I don't see why you couldn't possibly keep hitting him with those rail guns. You know, just don't use all of your phasers like every turn.
Right, right.
You might be able to keep your speed up and not get caught.
Agreed. And the rail guns have good damage out to like range 10. And if I call correctly, they're single turn arming.
But the only problem you have is you can't bring all four to bear in one impulse.
If they're single turn weapons, and I'm not familiar with the Jindarans at all.
Yeah.
If they're single turn weapons, it's a 1-4 chance. If you can centerline him at any point in the turn during while he's trying to chase you down, it's worthwhile taking a pot shot even out to range 20.
But that's what I'm saying, is the best you can bring is three of them to bear. I believe. Yeah. Two at a time, because the LF
you can't ever
and
do
RF.
Because
they're not FA.
Yeah, you have to center line them to get two. Otherwise, it's just one.
So,
unless let's see. No, you could get two in the left or right arcs, but if
But you can't get
otherwise
three.
You need a center line. Yeah, no, you can't get three.
And you don't get a center line. Even center line, you can only do two.
No, I mean, if you've got four of the rail guns. If your target is on your after center line, both of the after rail guns can hit you. Hit the target.
Right.
If you're on the forward center line, both of the forward rail guns could hit. If your target is in the left or right arc, you've got the forward and after rail guns on that side of the hull can hit, which makes the broadside pattern of your typical can't remember the simulator race, but you unlace your broadside, you hit 180 degrees, and throw another.
Frax. Yeah, Frax, I think
no,
it is.
Not the Frax. The,
no?
The Frax.
Oh, the ones that were the ones that were after the British Navy or something.
Yes.
They were supposed to simulate like the old ships. Know. Yeah. Old wooden ships. Oh, I can't
really
think of the name
of it.
The
only viable strategy to bring all four rail guns to a single point, and if you did it right, you could set it up and fire on an impulse where the other guy doesn't move the next impulse and head on the next impulse.
Right.
Well, that's what I'm saying, is you have no ability to bring them all to bear in one impulse.
Right.
So But on the other hand, it's got an excellent chance of, if you run around the board and you give him two off of one side and you turn and he chases you, you can give him two off the other side then.
Yeah,
and you can just keep plinking away. And you keep your speed up and you're not using your phasers. You're looking at, you know, and six out to 10, and you could stay outside of his overload range. Yeah. You could do some significant grinding down of their shields. Yeah. The only problem is, do they get to uncross the T and put a different shield on there to keep chasing you? And if they do, then you rinse and repeat until they've got their number two shield down and their number six shield down. And that's a bad thing for most opponents.
Shuttlecraft grid.
So
it looks like two of the shuttles are marked shuttles with a P on the notes category.
Prospecting shuttles.
Oh. Surprised that's in the tournament.
Yeah, they're extra special, aren't they?
Yeah, they're the prospecting charges that they can fire. I don't remember how much damage they do.
Not a lot, but if you're down to the end of a tournament, any little bit helps.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think it's like one of those things that if you fire it against a ship, it does like maybe 1 point of damage. It's, you know, because obviously prospecting charges are designed to be fired against asteroids. That's why you got prospecting shuttles.
But they could also go after your opponent's shuttles. That 1 point of damage could be the thing that strips that last weapon off your opponent, too.
Yep. And that's actually one of the benefits of the Celtorian itself, which is it has six shuttles. Versus the normal four shuttles. Crawford box. Okay. Moving on forward, back to the Tartar. Yeah, I agree that I think the ship in the debt that's strong, and I think it could probably easily be sanctioned because other than
it lacks crunch power.
Right, it lacks crunch power. I think the only
it's a subtlety ship, but you. If you can nibble somebody's shield down, then power to you.
Agreed. Because basically,
it's a hydrant. The first thing you do is you turn in and rather than try to mizio with the hydrant, you come in and you hit them on the first battle pass as hard as you can to try to ding a shield past the point of any brick and lower than the number four. And then you turn off, you reload, and then you just start sandpapering with the Hellbore.
True, and actually, that's one thing this you might actually need to do with this ship is actually use a direct fire Hellbore.
Yeah.
Because you only got two phaser ones. You got four phaser twos. And phaser twos, here they are, right here. Until you get within like range three, they're not that effective. And of course, that's what the Andromedans have, or some simulation of said phaser.
Right.
So yeah, I can see the Andromedan having an issue with this ship just because of the Hellbores. Because it's got three Hellbores, and it does, and the thing is, it doesn't need to fire them all every other turn. They can actually hold back some of them and just wait for the Andromeda to try to do even a simple toggle and fire the Hellbore, a Hellbore at it, and possibly cause issues with that. you know, inflict internals despite having an Elbor available.
Right.
And especially in given this configuration, because of you're not going to, because of the amount of power that's available on the ship, you're not going to fire that many overloads in my mind. Just because of, otherwise you're going to slow down a tremendous amount, especially against an Andromedan. You want to keep up your speed. At least I would think you would.
Of course.
Now, obviously, you can't do what.
Can you hold an overloaded Hellbore? Can't remember off the top of my mind.
No, you cannot.
Yeah, with only 4 points of batteries, you couldn't even overload at the time of firing with reserve power, because you need, what is it, 6 points over two turns for a Hellbore?
No.
And six more to overload?
No, it's all in the turn of firing.
Yeah, it's three
for Hellbores.
It's three and six.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you could in theory overload one at the time of firing with battery or reserve power, but just one.
Yep. Well, that's interesting. It only has three battery. Four, no, that's four. That's four.
That's four. Yeah, that's. I'm gonna go back and I'm gonna say your best bet still is just to put a big old pump knot on one of his shields, and then turn off, recharge the phaser capacitor, rebuild your Hellbore firing pattern, and then just sandblast the heck out of him. Saber dance and sandblast.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. And of course, the benefit of this ship versus the other ship. Doesn't have the fusions, therefore you have nothing to hit on the torp, so Mizzia doesn't hurt nearly as much. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you still have the problem if they hit the drone hit, you got a problem. But
you got a big problem.
But you can't lose like half your weapons in one Mizzia attack.
That is the hidden, that is the not so hidden downside to the Hydran.
Mm-hmm.
Lord Marshall, is it? No, yeah. Not a Lord Marshall. That's something else. But yeah, the standard Hydran tournament cruiser.
Right. I think that
mm-hmm.
I think it's the Lord Marshall, not the Lord Bishop. I think the Lord Bishop is the one with his Hellbores.
I thought that was the Iroquois. Either way.
Yeah, you might be right. I might be thinking of the heavy battle cruiser. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it is. I remember playing the battle cruisers a lot.
I remember taking a squadron of three Iroquois in one of our fights years and years and years ago, and somebody did not like the fact that I brought 12 Hellbores to the table and could use all of them on a single target.
Ouch.
As I was flying around in a super stack the whole dang day.
Mm-hmm. Oh, understood. Yeah, me and my crew back at college, what we would actually do, instead of we wouldn't play tournament ships. We'd be playing heavy battle cruisers. We like the heft of the additional weapons and powers. Of course, this is before I actually knew how to fly the Andromedan, how to even use the interpret the rules properly for the Andromedan. It was crazy.
I still remember the one battle we had where I had an Andromedan battle group and he had. He had made the mistake of weaseling for the EW shift because he thought I was about to really just absolutely blow into one of his ships. And so he had transferred drone control to his scout. His scout was in range of the mothership, so the mothership disdevved the scout. And then we had to spend 45 minutes figuring out exactly how many drone control channels he still had that were undisrupted, and how many drones he had to throw away.
Oh, jeez. So it was a combined fleet, huh?
Yeah, little squadron scale stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, mm-hmm. Those were some fun days.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, they were. Okay, we're going to move on. Oh, that's going to be an interesting one. I see medium cruiser. Again, the war cruiser of the IIC, which is interesting to say the release just because of it looks like it's almost got the same weapons as the regular Terminator cruiser. The only difference is the plasma G's. The plasma G's, if I call correctly, on the regular Terminator cruiser, here it is.
I think the regular current cruiser has a second PPD too.
No.
Just the one, right?
Right. It's the
two plasma G's.
Yeah, but RPLP on the regular Terminator cruiser. And it actually has only two plasma Fs, while the medium has four.
Yeah, but it has a different power curve.
Yeah, agreed.
And it has a smaller phaser array too.
And as a war cruiser, it's more of an eggshell.
True.
Than its big brother.
That is true.
So it's a little less durable. And so you really need to run that ship around and finesse it more. You can't star castle easily with that unless you're fighting another war cruiser.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But that's just my opinion.
Of all the tournament ships in the book here that are not sanctioned, I think the one that I would enjoy playing the most would be the Frax.
Which is the next one.
Mm-hmm.
I'm surprised that they haven't let this one in. It's a movement cost one ship. It's got 8 phaser ones, but they're forward extended, rear extended. So, you know, yes, you can get 8 in theory. On the sides, you can get 8 phaser ones to hit the same target. And same for the disruptor. The disruptors are those weird arcs where, again, you got 2 forward extended. And 2 rear extended.
Mm-hmm. If you're on the number 6 or the number 2 shield spline, the Alpha Strike is 4 disruptors and 8 phaser ones. You can get the same thing on the 3 and 5,
right?
But as long as you're on the shield spine. And the thing about it is that with the reason I think this thing would be fun to play is that among its other claims is that it's got drones.
Yep.
And you can turn around and you can, if you plan your attack just right, you can give him some drones to worry about to figure out how much he wants to actually let you play around with. It's also got double shuttle bays.
Yeah, I know. That's really, I just transfer double bay drop.
Yeah, I'd love to have something like this with a better turn mode, but hey, I'll take what I can get. The thing is,
C is not that bad.
C is not that bad at all. The thing is that if you're going toe to toe with the Orion or the Klingon, you know, you could want for B, but you're not going to get it. The thing is, this thing will saber dance, or it'll dance in and it'll play hard. But with the eight phaser ones, you could almost always arrange a broadside for. This thing has a really potent secondary, even if you don't charge the disruptors.
True.
And unlike the Celtorian, who also has eight phaser ones, you can't bring all of those to bear on a single target, can you?
Yes, you can.
Oh, you can?
Yes.
It's center line?
It's center more line. Difficult.
Center line, yes.
Yeah.
This one's a lot easier. Oh.
Well, the thing with this one that I don't like, and it's just a pet peeve, it's how many different configurations of disruptor and phaser can you have on how many different kinds of ships? Understood. You know, it's like you've got Cassini and Klingon as the two original starting races, and then you've got the Wynn. You've got potentially the Orions. You've got this. You know.
Don't forget the Lyrans. They use disruptors too.
Yeah, and the Lyrans. You got two different Lyran versions. You know, all two different factions of Lyrans, of which you have basically, two different ships. But it's just kind of I think it's just like one disruptor boat too many.
Understood. Basically, you prefer to have more variety when it comes to weapon systems. So, okay, what?
Well, it's not that. It's not that. It's too much variety. You get too many ships of this particular kind. You know, with too many different combinations of, you know, four disruptors and a whole bunch of phasers and a couple of drones. The Great Black Shark has drone racks. The Kazini's main thing is drones, but it has an array that's, you know, similar. Then you've got, you know, hold on a second. Then you got, basically, how many disruptor armed ships in the tournament? And the thing is, it's within their own universe, it's a conjectural simulator race versus one of the ones you would expect to play on a campaign. So, so it's just kind of like, it's just like, yeah, we want to put it in there because we have it. As opposed to,
although you just inspired an interesting thought on my end with this talk, what if just playing the what if game? What if you change the APR to AWR and swap the disruptors for photons out? Would that make the ship any more fun to fly for you?
No, not really. And again, it's one of those. I think it's a saturation thing for me.
So you'd want a completely total different
system
altogether.
I think there's a certain point where it's like, this was an era where they came out with the cookie cutter ships. Remember that whole period in the 90s when they were coming out of their lawsuits and they said, we're going to publish everything under the sun nine different ways to Sunday. And, you know, part of that was you had all the war cruisers come out. You had a cookie cutter version of every single thing shoved out in all those different expansions. And it's just so many different things that there's a certain spot where it's like, okay, well, we got this other new thing, but it's a simulator race that just for training purposes, blah, 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 blah. It's like, what's the point at that point? It's just one of those things that just kind of like, it doesn't grab me.
As I recall, from board comments of the era, one of the things they were doing was that they knew they had to keep throwing new stuff out there in order to give their customers and their players something new to see at the game stores every now and then. They were trying everything they could think of, and there was so many places they couldn't go any further than they'd already gone. And so what it amounted to was is that that's about the time that Bruce Gras started trying the original Omega Octant stuff, and that ended horribly. And I'm being charitable.
The issue with the Omegas is that the great hard drive crash.
Yes. Yes, that would have been a lot different if Mr. Graw had
backups,
an appropriate backup schedule, or didn't have a hardware fault at an inopportune time. Considering the work he did on the what became the Bab 5 game, it might have been really interesting.
That's just my opinion.
They went through a cookie cutter phase where they basically said, okay, we can make another couple of hundred ships by setting up these four templates and then just swapping everything around based on whatever the Empire's main weapon systems and other peculiarities are. And that's when we end up with the pseudo diversity of ships that you see in F&E.
Yeah. So, but yeah, it's just, but like I'm saying, it's just a saturation point for me. It's like, I saw those and it's like, okay, I don't want to go any for that. And I just play my Fed.
That's probably why there hasn't been a bigger move to get any of these sanctioned.
So. Well, and that's the other thing. A reason some of these things aren't sanctioned is because they're not, you can't really tweak them because, again, it's hard enough to balance all the tournament ships. You know, I mean, the core originals are pretty much balanced. But there's a certain complexity level to what they're doing that when you start trying to add in the extra stuff, it's going to be, you know, your Tartar will suck against 9 out of 10 other tournament ships, but it'll utterly crush one and it'll have this totally unbalanced thing. And then when you tweak that, you go in the opposite direction and you get this whole never ending, you can't ever balance the ships properly kind of problem. So it's like, when I look at the tournament thing, it's, generally speaking, it's like, to me, they could have stopped with not having the win in it.
The Black Shark.
And just having the original stuff. Yeah. You know, from there on, you know, they could have just had the original stuff, like, and been, have a good balanced tournament play. But it just, it is something to me that it's just like, it makes it potentially unbalancing. So, yeah. So there's a reason these probably won't ever be like sanctioned. And it's simply because there's a certain point that you pass.
Well, that, and considering the fact that about the only real tournament profiles that are doing anything at all is Sapphire anymore, and the rare time it shows up at a con somewhere, I don't think either of the Steves want to spend that much effort on looking at these other designs that they know need work and they know are edge cases anyway.
Well, and the flip side of all that is, are they going to do product that's going to appeal to a larger base of people, or are they going to do something that only 10 people are interested in the planet?
And unfortunately, that's the other side of what they've got to do, is they've got to make sure that whatever they release is going to produce a return on investment that's going to allow them to make something next year.
Well, and the other side of that, though, is what are they doing to grow the game in the sense of getting it out there to new people? I mean,
right.
Are they going to Origins and Gen Con? No. You know, when they...
That probably when they, has more
their,
to do
their,
with
the, their big decline started when they moved out of the main hall in Origins.
Yeah.
And you it's know, like, mm-hmm. if people don't see the game being played, then they're not going to pick up on it. So,
well, the gaming convention scene is not what it was back then either.
Yeah.
It wasn't just that they left the big hall at Origins. It's also that unless you go to one of these Comic-Con sized conventions, where are you going mm-hmm. to give up your whole weekend at this mecca of gaming to play a game, one game, or are you going to, I'll drop in and take a look at that later while you go around and you browse and sample everything. It takes commitment from your fans to be willing to give up 2/3 of a convention just to sit down for something like the tournaments of old. And you're right. Mm-hmm. It does come down to having it's the promise. The promise the game publisher makes to the people who purchase the game and want to play it is that I want the publisher to make what people will play so that I can find somebody to play with. And when that stops happening, publishers die. It'd be great if we could get, if somebody started going to the big conventions again and really finding this, really throwing the stuff around like they used to. The thing is I don't think way the economy is right now, I'm not entirely sure there's anybody willing to do it unless they're doing it for some other reason.
Well, the thing is they would have to do it.
Yeah. And
you know, and it's that
Patrick
simple, or pay somebody
well.
To do it.
Yeah. Patrick wouldn't travel well, and I don't think Steve Cole wants to spend
yeah,
time away from the work.
Yeah, and that's basically it. It's a whole bunch of different reasons.
Yeah, it really is. So, Paul, you got anything else in the hopper of these oddball ships?
Oh, I think, actually, yeah. There are some, but
back
I think we will let it end there.
Well, before you cut us off completely, I do remember seeing on the website a list of oddball ships that's not in this module T. It's nowhere near sanctioning. But have you ever seen the SSD for the tournament bats?
Yes.
No.
Yes. That was
there
an
is...
April Fool's one that they did years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I remember
and
that.
It does. It's got a move cost of one, and it's got enough warp power to move 30. They even gave it a turn mode. It basically flies like an inverse version of the Triaxians with Phaser 4s as its primary heavy weapon.
Yeah, that one should be sanctioned. Yeah, that one should be sanctioned.
I think it'd be fun just for the funny looks you'd get.
Oh, agreed there. Can you imagine everybody taking a bat and fighting it out using a bat? That would be interesting. Yeah,
sorry. Not sorry.
That's fine. Okay, with that, I think we'll wrap it up for this evening. It's actually getting kind of late. Def, it's been a pleasure. I've truly, truly, truly enjoyed having your company. And
well, I'm glad I found a good spot to stop and call and talk tonight.
Awesome. Cause I know it's hard for you because you've been finding yourself in like dead zone.
Unfortunately, that's the way the schedule's been working out. And when I'm behind the eight ball on my timetable, I can't exactly take liberties if I've got hours of service available and highway ahead of me.
Oh, understood. Then Lord knows I would never expect you to do something crazy like get Starlink.
No.
Yeah, that's $130 a month. No.
It doesn't. You have to get a specialized antenna if you want to use it in motion.
Right.
And even then, things interfere with it.
Right. Oh, understood. That's one of those things that, you know, you would want to set up someplace, you know, not mobile, you know, that you're not moving at that moment in time. And because that's when you actually get set up so that you don't have like, oh, a big, large building interfering or a tree being under a tree, you know. Being, I do one of the truck stops, you know, that to me, that'd be a perfect place. Like, using for that kind of thing. Cause they usually have a big parking lot.
I see a few drivers out there with something similar, but for the most part, most of the time, whenever I see Starlink, it's on an RV.
Mm-hmm. Same here. That was one thing that I went camping last month. And when I went out camping, there was no cell phone reception. None. Zero. It's not even, oh, you got one bar. I mean, it's zero.
Absolutely. Sounds wonderful, zero. Actually.
And actually, there's, like most camps, you know, they have a host. One that, you know, the people that, they stay there the whole summer and so forth. And they actually had a Starlink set up. For theirs, so like, cool. I can understand that. But if I was them, I would do the same thing too.
Can't blame them at all.
No, don't blame them at all. Of course, for me, what I had to do is I had to drive 20 miles down to the local town to to get some cell phone reception. And the thing is, I had to do that at least. Definitely for the first day, because the first day I had to at least tell my wife, yeah, honey, I made it. You know, we have the cell phone reception where I'm at, but I made it. I'm fine because it was like a 3.5 hour drive from my house. Oh, that reminds me, in 2 weeks, there will be no podcast. I will be out of town, and really, I'll have no time for this in 2 weeks. Well, I'm going to a convention. Basically, it's the Eucharistic Congress, which is kind of a big, like almost a convention, you could kind of thing, where you're going to be doing. So I'm going to be doing something from like 8 o'clock in the morning till 10 o'clock at night. So I'll have no chance to do anything. And as that's one thing I have to talk to my warlord people and go, okay, how are we going to do this? Because I was thinking about doing is just pushing all the turns and out a week. Say, okay, everyone, instead of getting your turns in 2 weeks, you get your turns in 3 weeks. So that 1 week is kind of skipped. And everyone stays kind of on the same relative schedule, though, you know, when it comes to the weeks that they're actually going to be due, it's going to knock them off. But it's like, it's either that or we skip that one and have it so that one game is due in a month instead of 3 weeks. So I think that's probably the better part of valor on that one. Anyhow, don't want to go too far. Jeff, it's been a pleasure. You have a good night, and you take care.
Good night, everybody.
Drive safely out there.
Good night, Jeff. Take care.
Night.
And Doug, it's always wonderful to have you around. And I did reply finally. Sorry for the late reply because I had to think about it. About the Facebook message. So.
So were you typing in while we were talking or what? Because
I typed it in around an hour and a half ago.
Oh, okay. I didn't check it before coming in to check.
Right. That's why I figured I was going to do it a little like half an hour before then, and then I started working on the sound issue. And so that took all my time. Anyhow. Doug, you have a good night.
All right. Feel free to give me a holler sometime.
Will do. Okay.
Thanks.
So, had lovely discussion about different tournament ships, especially those that are currently not sanctioned. And some ideas about them. Obviously, as was pointed out, the Tartar, we could probably have it in there. I don't think it would break anything. Obviously, if you're I think that when it comes to tournament ships, not all of them are balanced, especially now that we have the Jindarian in. The Jindarian, I don't think, really is balanced to win any tournaments. You know, it actually would have to be, I think, a larger ship, probably more power, and so forth. It would have to be a custom tournament ship just for the Jindarians. I don't think that's going to happen. Which I think it's the problem. I think most people would agree that's a good thing. You know, we have these quirky ships that if people want to play, they can play, and that'd be fine. So anyhow, with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.